And here we go. Welcome to the Anarchist Investor Live. I am Matt. I'm coming at you every Monday through Friday at noon Eastern on the Ungovernable podcast channel. It is March 22nd. It's Friday. We freaking made it to the end of the week. I'm so happy that you're all here. A reminder, help me out with the algo. It doesn't like me. Give me a sub, hit the notification bell, thumbs up, upvote, share. And I'm live the entire time. So I'm here to take your comments too. So if you have anything that you're looking at, that you're interested in, any kind of reactions or feedback, let me know. I want to talk about it. So with that, what are we looking at today? Today should be a relatively quick show. It is Friday. It's kind of like, I won't call it like nothing, you know, I won't say nothing's moving, but like it's a little sedate today in terms of the way the markets are moving. And I am going to focus a little bit more on the casino today because not that we want much of our money there, but because I'm super interested in kind of following how the casino acts and then seeing how some of these contrarian investments that we're putting our money to work in react to that dynamic. And so obviously the big story this week has been the, you know, the Federal Reserve rate decision on Wednesday, something I affectionately call FUD Day. And that decision was to keep rates exactly the same, but essentially jawbone about lower rates in the future. And so we saw a little bit of euphoria, or not necessarily euphoria, but like, you know, some strong positivity in the casino. There was a lot of upward movement in pretty much everything, you know, all risk assets after the decision and the interview that I guess maybe people were hoping to not hear like some kind of nuclear bomb out of the Federal Reserve. And that's exactly what they got. They didn't get bad news. And so they decided, okay, this is good. We're going to push things up. Well, another day and the story is a little bit different. On the hold screen, I had, this is the consumer discretionary sector. Okay. And so we're going to talk a little bit about this and the dynamic here. And we're going to talk about Tesla a bit today and electric vehicles in general. Tesla is one of the biggest components of the consumer discretionary sector within the marketplace. So what's consumer discretionary? Well, it's not staples like food and water. It's not lodging like real estate and things like that. And it's not necessarily, but there is some crossover in terms of like electronics, semiconductors, computers, things like that. But really consumer discretionary is like the other stuff. A lot of it's like autos and, you know, kind of like toys, and it's discretionary. It's not like obligated spending that you have to pay for every single day or week in order to, you know, keep food on the table and a roof over your head. So, like I said, electric vehicles are a decent sized component of that. And what we saw was, and if you look at the very tail end of the chart, this is a daily chart. You see that nice big pop up up here. Okay. The big green candle and then the pop up yesterday. And now we've kind of popped back down again. And typically when this happens, you know, like markets don't move directly up. They don't move directly down. You typically see some kind of continuity in them. When you start to see these kind of like disjointed moves, and you're seeing a lot of them in this index, like if you look on the daily chart, there's a lot of gaps, right? Like these things are not necessarily just kind of picking up where they left off yesterday and then, you know, just deciding to move up or down again. You're seeing a lot of, you know, gaps higher, gaps lower. Gaps actually point to what I would consider an inefficiency in price discovery. Because think about it this way, like you're looking to buy like, you know, a coffee cup today and it costs you $10. And then all of a sudden tomorrow, your wife is like, hey, I like that coffee cup. I would like one too. And you go to the store and they say, oh, well, that, you know, $10 was yesterday's price. Today it's like $12. And you're like, wait, one day? And all of a sudden I have to pay $2 extra. Like, why wouldn't it be, you know, $10.05? Why do I got to pay $2 extra? Like basically a 20% increase. And what they'll tell you is that, you know, that's just the way it goes. And, you know, we've had some big drawdowns in our supply or whatever, or a sale ended or something. In the marketplace, that analogy is not like that's not healthy. Like, that's not a good thing. All kinds of gaps all over the places. You know, yesterday something was worth a lot more than it is today, or yesterday something was worth a lot less than it is today, right? In terms of when you purchase something, that's not an efficient market. Consumer discretionary has been tons of this. And there have been some other areas where there have been these gaps as well in pricing. Well, Tesla is a big component here. The euphoria from, you know, 2 days ago on FUD day is gone. They, you know, the black boxes and the hedge funds and stuff tried to follow through on that upward price action, and they got, you know, a day of it, but now we're right back down where we were basically the middle of the day on Wednesday. So what does that tell you? I mean, and you also have to remember, today's Friday, this is options expiration. So it's not like a big options expiration day, but it's Friday, right? Things should gravitate towards where, like, these big call and, you know, put walls are and stuff like that. And it's just, it's not doing it. It's consumer discretionary is down today. Okay. And it's not like the broader market is down. There's other components here that are still up, but you're seeing some of the same signs in these other areas. So, like, this is the semiconductors. This is, you know, Nvidia for the most part, but then also, you know, Micron and AMD and Intel and all these other companies. And you're seeing a similar dynamic play out where, you know, you had some euphoria a week ago, that pulled back. This was completely in line with when Nvidia topped out, right? And it pulled back. And then the Federal Reserve, you know, decision or no decision gave it a little bit of support, but that's faltering a little bit. It faltered yesterday. Today, it's up a little bit. But again, normally these things move a lot more on Fridays because of the options expiration. I'm starting to see, you know, weakness creep in. And this fits with my theory that you're going to see a fit here within the next month or two. I think that the stock market is going to throw a little bit of a fit so that it kind of pushes the Federal Reserve to do what the stock market wants it to do, which is cut rates. Okay. In line with this, we saw, like, the inflation sensitive names rally on FUD day. And since then, they've pulled back, right? So silver, rally, pull back. Gold, rally up to new all-time high, pull back. Right back at the top end of this range, right? So it's not necessarily selling off hard. In fact, I would say if the market throws a fit, some of these things aren't necessarily going to kind of come down to the same extent that other things are going to come down. So I would expect gold and silver to pull back, but not, you know, to the extent that, say, other, you know, stocks will pull back. I think there might be some weakness in there. Or in the case of gold, I mean, I could make a really good argument to say that over the next couple of months, you could see it just hug the top end of this trading range at, you know, 2160, 2150, 2160. Same thing with silver. I could see silver just kind of still clunking around in this range, just waiting for something to give it that exit velocity to go to the upside. A rate cut would probably be that thing, right? And so we're seeing this with a number of things. Copper, right? Rally, fall off. Oil rallied, pulled back a little bit. But you know what? I actually think oil is going to be one of those things, too, that doesn't necessarily pull back as hard with the broader market if this, you know, fit theory comes to fruition and, you know, traders throw a tantrum because they're not getting their rate cuts, right? So I'm keeping an eye on this because I want to see how this affects the dynamics in some other areas, namely crypto. And if you notice, Bitcoin, similar dynamic. And actually, I have to kind of like zoom in a little bit here because of the way that Bitcoin trades. But Bitcoin, if you notice, big rally, right? Right back up into the middle part of that range that we referenced yesterday. And it's since fallen back down below the bottom end of that range. Bitcoin, you could see, we're going to figure out, like, we're still trying to read the book on Bitcoin to see where it fits into the investment spectrum, so to speak, right? And so, you know, is it a safe harbor asset? Is it analogous to gold? Is it a inflation sensitive, you know, asset like oil or like copper that's going to move like a commodity? We have to still figure out what this looks like. Well, right now it's suffering the same you know, weakness, I'll call it, that is in the broader market that's happening out there in the casino. And so Bitcoin has pulled back. It's below this support level. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens. If the market throws a fit, does Bitcoin throw a fit too? Right. I mean, you got big time ETFs now involved, right? Like, you got a lot of Wall Street money flow that's kind of pushing the price of Bitcoin up and down. How does it react now that Wall Street has a little bit more of a, I'll call it a say in the price of what Bitcoin is, right? Are we going to see this thing fall with the broader market, or will it hold up? Will it be like gold and, you know, hold up to the bottom end of this range? And like I said, wait for a catalyst so that it can hit exit velocity and get up through, you know, the mid 70s into 90 and $100,000 territory. We're going to find out. I actually would anticipate that, just based off of the way Bitcoin trades, and, you know, a lot of people are going to call me a freaking Benedict Arnold on this one if they're like, you know, Bitcoin maxi or whatever. But I actually still see the potential of this inverted head and shoulders playing out, which means if the market throws a fit, I can see Bitcoin pulling back to like 45,000. And that forming the right shoulder. And then later on, say like the beginning of 2025, it end up breaking out once we figure out whoever the president is and this, that, and the other thing. And we see whether or not, you know, DC is going to continue spend like drunken sailors, or whether or not there's going to be austerity and, you know, budget cuts and tax increases and the whole nine. Interestingly enough, today, one of the stories that also is percolating out there is the House of Representatives just passed a gigantic bloated budget again to fund the entire government. It's now going to the Senate, and I would expect them to pass some form of it. And so they haven't gotten the message. They're going to continue spending like they feel like they have to and want to, and however they need to pay off their constituents and their benefactors in order to stay in their seats of power. So I don't see that, you know, necessarily causing weakness. But that being said, that news comes across the wire, and, you know, the casino didn't really react to it. Like, we didn't go up, we didn't go down. We're just kind of still sitting where we're at, right? Can take some time for this to play out, because they need to see whether or not the Senate's actually going to approve it too. But that being said, I you know, we're going to find that out at the tail end of this year, and, you know, we'll talk more about kind of like the impact of politics on, you know, specifically anarchist investing, or at least trying to neutralize the impact of politics on your portfolio as an anarchist investor into the future. But right here and now, what we're seeing is we're seeing weakness after what should have been, you know, something that everyone was saying was going to be a positive overall for risk assets. So we're going to keep an eye on it. All right. Now, I did the charts first. This seems to be like a new thing where I do the charts first and then I do my rant second. but so I'm going to pull down this chart and I'm going to share what I was looking at in terms of the actual like news stories for today. All right. And the story that I keyed in on today from Yahoo Finance, and technically this comes out of Bloomberg, it's reposted on Yahoo Finance, was Tesla's trimming its car output in China as electric vehicle sales growth slows. So this is something that we're, and again, remember, think Tesla, think consumer discretionary spending, okay? Electric vehicles have had a significant move higher in sales over the last 3-4 years. It's been fueled by a lot of government subsidies, right? And so again, this is also going to be, you know, part of that, seeing how the political landscape kind of factors into, you know, investment and things like that moving forward. But so that being said, Tesla is experiencing some weakness in the electric vehicle market. Now, what you have to remember is Tesla is like 55% of the electric vehicle market. Okay. So if they're experiencing weakness, it's more than likely that everyone else in the electric vehicle market is experiencing weakness as well. And guess what? There's actually a story that I pulled up that I didn't see until I actually went digging today. But there's a story that came out March 13th in CNBC, and they're basically talking about the electric vehicle euphoria kind of abating, right? Where this high level of demand for electric vehicles isn't really you know, keeping up with what it was within the past couple of years. Part of that has to do with the sunsetting or just kind of baking in these government subsidies that now everyone either expects or have been, you know, retracted in some sort of way. And then there's another element here of, you know, essentially what people's personal balance sheets look like, what their personal financial health looks like. And it's no secret that electric vehicles, like, you know, pound for pound at the sale window are more expensive, right? And so what you're seeing is, and actually what's detailed in this article, is they talk through some of the different manufacturers, you know, not just Tesla, but they're talking through, you know, Mercedes-Benz and Volkswagen and Ford. And one of the interesting moves that Ford is making, not that I think that they've done a great job of running their company over the last couple of decades, actually, but they're actually decreasing the amount of electric vehicle production, and they're going back to actually what I think personally, but I'm not the CEO of Ford, back to what they should have been doing all along, which was hybrid models, right? The hybrid models are, you know, kind of like that bridge between the electric vehicle future that a lot of people in Washington, D.C. want to see, and the, you know, the old dirty fossil fuel vehicle past, so to speak, that we're coming from, right? And mostly still present. So they're moving into hybrid models. So they're actually kind of changing. So this isn't just a competition thing. It's not that, you know, Tesla or any of the other electric vehicle manufacturers are being outcompeted by another one. It actually has to do with overall demand. This is the demand issue. It's an economics issue. Okay. And so that consumer discretionary piece of it is a major bellwether for how strong the actual economy is. Okay. Because think about it this way. People are going to still have to spend on food and water. They're still going to have a car. But the question is, are they going to just, you know, drive around a Ford Fiesta in order to get from, you know, point A to point B and still, you know, be buying gasoline? Or are they going to splurge on a Tesla and whatever charging port they have to put in the house, et cetera, in order to be able to kind of live that kind of lifestyle? I think the consumer discretionary piece of the economy, and in fact, I don't have it up here, but a lot of other kind of like short-term traders, what they look at is the ratio between consumer discretionary and consumer staples. And when that's going up, meaning consumer discretionary spending is outpacing the cost or the spending on, you know, those staples, those everyday food and water kind of staples, then that means growth, right? People are spending, they're expecting more growth in their job and their income, they're buying more luxuries, and that has been suffering. That has been going down, meaning, and most of it is because of inflation for the beginning part of this trend. The second part of the trend that the Federal Reserve and Washington, D.C. are trying to avoid is that ratio shouldn't just go down because, you know, consumer staples and food and stuff get more expensive. They're worrying that it would go down because people just stop spending on things like electric vehicles. They stop spending on luxury items and they just hunker down and buy the basics of life. I think there's a large portion of the population that have already hunkered down and changed their spending habits, my family included. I would love to know from your end, like, throw it in the comments. Are you changing your spending habits? Have you gone through and started cutting expenses like, you know, I have and my family has? Because I can tell you for certain that, you know, if you are, you're not alone, right? Your monthly expenses, and many of those might be luxuries, right, become expendable when the staples of life get more expensive and when you are concerned about the, you know, economic future of the country and of the globe, quite frankly, right? So throw those into the comments. I want to hear what's going on in your neck of the woods. But that being said, I definitely think that the storm is coming. I think we're going to see, and anyone who's familiar with hurricanes, like I went to school down in the South, so I'm very familiar with hurricanes. Hurricanes are basically a circle, right? Or a circle with a you know, donut. You know, it's basically a donut shape with a donut hole in the middle, and that's the eye, right? You have to go through the front end of the hurricane, and then you get that kind of like, you know, placid center of the eye where everything's calm, and then you go through the back end of the hurricane. Depending on what orientation, sometimes the you know, first part's more dangerous than the second or vice versa. Well, in this particular instance, I think the first part of the hurricane we have to go through, the front wall of the hurricane, is not going to be that bad. I think it's just going to be some, you know, a drop in confidence. It's going to be a little bit of weakness. You're going to see some prices come down in terms of investment prices and stuff like that. And then you'll see the Federal Reserve try and ride in on its white horse, cut interest rates a little bit to try and, you know, reassure people. You'll see, you'll be in the eye, right? Things will be placid for a little while longer. You'll see asset prices go back up, but they won't go back up as dramatically, because the smart people, the learned people, the experienced people will know that the tail end of that hurricane's still coming, right? And so you'll see asset prices go back up, but they won't be as strong. And then you'll see the tail end of the hurricane hit. We are just at the point where I think we are entering the front end of that hurricane. The front face of that hurricane is coming here, because, and like I tweeted the other day, with every passing FOMC meeting where they don't cut rates, but they continue to kind of like jawbone it, the stakes get higher, and people get more impatient. They get more anxious. They get more worried that that day will never come. And they're going to clam up. They're going to stop paying up for investments. Some of these high-flying investments will begin to pull back as a result of it, because that buying fervor will die down. And they're then going to force the Fed to act. And then the question just becomes, you know, what's the direct result of that? Remembering full well that my thought is that things like gold and silver and Bitcoin and other commodities like oil and uranium are going to benefit from this, right? And I also think that they're not going to have that positive of an impact on the economy, because the economic forces that are in play right now are almost inevitable. Okay. I mean, you're trying to, you know, turn the Titanic. Okay. You're going to hit the iceberg. That's basically what's going to happen, right? The iceberg may already have been hit, right? And you're still trying to turn. And they're going to try and fix things after the fact, but it's not going to work. I don't think they're going to get the economic uptick that they're expecting. And in their dot plots, I think they're being overly euphoric. No, overly utopian, thinking that, you know, U.S. GDP is going to improve too. Because, not to get too, like, you know, economics nerdy with you, but if I go pull up the dollar chart here, hold on, got to pull up this window. If I pull up the chart of the dollar, and again, as I referenced yesterday, this isn't a great proxy for understanding the value of the dollar, because it hasn't changed much over, you know, 50 years, but we know that the value has been eroded. The reason why this chart doesn't just go down and down and down and down and down in perpetuity is because it's based off of its relative value to other toilet paper currencies that are out there circulating in the world. And so that's why the dollar still kind of maintains some, you know, quote unquote, relative strength versus those things. But if you notice recently, the dollar is moving higher. It's continued to move higher even after the Federal Reserve said, oh yeah, we're going to cut rates in the future. Why the hell would the Federal Reserve say that and then the dollar continue to move higher, right? There's either doubt that that'll be the case, or there's an understanding that even if they do cut rates, it might not be able to escape the inevitable. And as the dollar moves up, U.S. exports get more expensive, meaning the trade deficit grows, meaning GDP gets weaker. So from that standpoint, them thinking that, you know, the economy is going to have this great uptick because eventually they're going to cut rates and things are going to be better, I think is overly utopian. I think it's actually delusional. The economic forces that are coming, they can't stop, but they're still trying to, like, you know, make everyone feel like it's okay, right? Don't worry, the storm's not going to be that bad. You just have to ride it out, right? That's what's happening. Dollar's rising. Now, could reverse course on Monday. It's coming up to a line of resistance that we've held since the very top of the valuation of the dollar from, you know, September of 2022. So could it reverse course right here at this line? Sure. Could it completely bust through when things like consumer discretionary spending fall off, when everyone was expecting it to just continue to melt up? Yeah, that could happen too, right? We're going to have to watch it. But from my standpoint, I think the storm is coming. I think we're on the verge of it right now. And the question then becomes, what does it look like? Is it just, you know, is it a category one or two and we just have a little bit of damage and then we can clean up afterward and go about it back about our lives? Or is it something that's you know, verging on crisis catastrophe kind of stuff. And now we have to kind of run for the lifeboats. I mean, we try and prepare for all of those eventualities. And that's why you have to have a diversified portfolio to use Wall Street speak. But that diversification doesn't mean just like, you know, oh, I have, you know, 50 different stocks. Okay. Stocks probably aren't going to fare well regardless. I mean, there might be a few sectors in the market that'll be okay. But I think just because you have 50 different stocks in your IRA, 401k, or even if your cash brokerage account, doesn't mean you're going to be safe from what's coming if what comes to fruition actually does. And again, these things happen slowly. Like they're lumbering. So it doesn't always happen in one shot, right? So like one day to the next, I mean, like the coffee cup example, right? Is just a sign. It doesn't mean things are going to fall apart tomorrow, but it does mean that, you know, once the Titanic starts to head towards that iceberg, right, turning it takes a really long time. Once it hits the iceberg, figuring out how much the damage is takes a really long time. It doesn't happen moment to moment. It's a process that sometimes you don't even know the full extent of it until after, right? So that's where we're at. That's what we're looking at. That's what we're watching. I'm continuing to watch the markets. And like I said, there's probably going to be some buying opportunities here in the near future. So that's why it's also important to watch, because if you do have any cash sitting on the sideline, if you took my advice and took some profit when, say, like Bitcoin ran up to 70 or when gold was up at 2200, okay, if you took a little bit of profit and you didn't necessarily immediately cycle that money back into other things, and you're sitting on some cash, or you've just had some cash for a while that you're sitting on, there's going to be some buying opportunities here if there is this kind of moment of weakness before the Federal Reserve tries to rescue everything, okay? And when they do, there will be a move higher, right? And everyone will think that they can take a collective sigh of relief when realistically you're just in the eye of the storm, right? Like you're just waiting for the real part of the storm to come through. So something to keep in mind. Look, I appreciate everyone. I'm glad you stuck with me all week. I'm looking forward to, you know, talking at you again next week. Again, I'm here Monday through Friday at 12 Eastern, every single day, just talking about, you know, markets and stuff like this. A reminder, whatever you're looking at, throw it in the comments. I want to hear about it. And another reminder, if you go to anarchistinvestor.substack.com, subscriber list is growing. And on April 1st, you get a shot at some free silver. Let's see, how much is each one of these coins worth? Each is an ounce. Right now, silver is trading at $24.87. But that being said, it might not still be 25 bucks, but this is still close to $100 worth of silver that I'm giving away for free. And guess what? It's not just this month. It is my intention to do this every single month. It might be silver some months it might be Bitcoin. Some minds, it might be other crypto or investment stuff. Who knows? Gift cards, maybe even fiat currency if, you know, in different ways, shape, or form. If we actually hit the point where we have some depreciation and the currency doesn't continue to lose all of its value. But that being said, just a reminder, for free, you get into the drawing. And also, you get a pretty kick-ass newsletter every single day. So a lot of people don't know. I write a newsletter in the morning. And then I do this live cast at noon every single, you know, Monday through Friday. So keep your eyes out for it. Get in. You know, you need a ticket to what's the phrase? You need a ticket to dance, right? Well, your ticket doesn't cost anything. It just costs you putting your email in and getting an awesome newsletter. So with that, I appreciate you all. Happy Friday. I hope you have some fantastic plans lined up. I'm going to go relax for a couple of days and chill out. And then I'll be back at it again Monday. And hopefully I'll see you all there. So with that, love you. Appreciate you. Peace.